Dubai Eye
103.8.
So there I was, Zines, the other day, thinking about all things New Year's resolutions. And I'm not really one for resolutions because I'm constantly breaking them on like the first or the second day of January. And I was thinking of what are the things that I'd really like to do more of. And one of the things that I came up with, and I hope you don't think that I'm being a bit too sort of, you know,
what,
spiritual with this one or anything, or getting a bit too serious.
Okay.
But I sort of thought I'd like to be a little bit more, I'd like to be a bit more honest in 2020.
Oh.
I'd like to speak a few more of my sort of, not so much home truths, but what I'm thinking, rather than just buttoning my lip the whole time.
So you were holding back in 2019?
Oh, yeah.
What? Oh, my gosh.
I just think we've sort of come into this culture now. I don't know if it's social media, if it's just us, or if it's politeness or etiquette, whatever it is, that a lot of us say the things that people want us to say without actually saying the things that are going through our minds.
I know. Sometimes we find ourselves agreeing with other people, but I think you were bold in 2019, so 2020 we'll see more, gripes?
The wheels are going to come off then, that's for sure.
The
reason I mention is because I'd like to take a leaf out of the recipe book of our next guest, because he is an individual who speaks his mind online, and with good reason as well. And I think that's why he's become one of the sort of go-to voices for proper food reviews here in the region, food critic, content creator, and of course, revered at Food Shake, joins us live in studio to do today's paper review. Food Shake, thanks for being with us. Much appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here finally.
Happy New Year, first and foremost.
And you know what? At what date do you stop saying Happy New Year?
Well, that's another. That's great.
I mean, yeah, it's still the 5th, so we're good for now.
Can we get away with it? What, 7th? 7th?
I don't know. I mean, I've said it as late as March in some years.
People do go the whole way through January, don't they? Yeah. Trying to remind themselves. Maybe it's that thing of the resolution thing. It's just a little reminder
there
of themselves.
Go, right?
That's it.
It could be.
Great to have you on board. But for those that are silly enough not to be following at Food Shake, explain to them the mantra. What's the thinking behind?
So it started a few years ago. It was actually born from having read a lot of these highly polished reviews that I was subject to as a restaurant operator myself, and very kind of tongue in cheek and very scheduled and controlled kind of reviews of certain restaurants. And I thought, you know what, there needs to be a platform, there needs to be a voice where there's a little bit more, like you said, a little bit more honesty. It wasn't a case of setting anything up to start, you know, bashing restaurants or creating drama or anything like that, but just, you know, kind of saying it how you saw it in to a certain extent, and then not taking yourself too seriously. I think you know, a lot of people can benefit from doing that. You know, it's food is fun. Yeah. You know, food is meant to be enjoyable. Sure, it's a business and you've got to have that serious side, but for the consumer, you know, going out is supposed to be an enjoyable pastime. And I wanted to create a platform and these reviews and these writings to really kind of reflect that element of the industry.
It is a consumer-driven and led industry as well. And that's why I suppose my sort of lead in was there's nothing wrong with it. But, you know, I think we've got to this point where we see honesty as being, ooh, shock and awe. Ooh, they're looking just to get above the other people populating the world of social media at the moment. But there's nothing wrong with home truths if they are justified.
Absolutely. And look, and again, it's a case of you know, I hope to think that through my writing I can be honest without being negative.
Yeah.
You know, if I had a bad burger, I can describe it to you so that you know it's bad without me saying it's bad.
Yeah.
And I think being able to just kind of gently explain that through the reviews is super important.
How's it been? I mean, you've been overseeing things here over the last decade for sure. How is the scene? You know, we're still going through these constant reviews the last 10 years, a review in this, a review in that.
Those.
2010 to 2020. How's the food landscape or the food and beverage landscape changed in Dubai?
It's been interesting. I mean, so I think 2010 was still very much the rise or the saturation of these big imported brands that were still coming in from the States and from Europe. And there was a lot of, you know, imported pre-opening teams with funny accents telling you all about their concept and whatnot. And then kind of, you know, I think it was just a journey of maturity, you know, and you fast forward to today and you've got this landscape that has these great kind of local homegrown talent that has developed over the last decade, you know, through, and I think, to be fair, the recession of 2008, 2009 created some significant talent. I mean, there's a saying, you know, you become a great sailor through stormy waters.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to go through difficult times, you become a better restaurateur, you become a better chef. And I think we're slowly starting to see the benefit of that today.
What about the decade in review through service? I mean, we talked about the customer-led sort of idea. Has that changed as well?
Yeah, look, I think I did a post about it on Instagram. Again, you know, the content was massive on kind of projections and trends and reviews. And I thought, do I want to write something? Do I want to kind of get into that? And so I did a quick kind of, you know, decade through the server's eyes. And it was really a case of kind of going through where 2011, I think, was when discounts started happening. And I think the entertainment started launching and gaining a lot of traction. 2012 was Instagram, and people started ordering through what they saw on Instagram rather than looking at the menu. And then 13 was again, this celebrity chef that were here but weren't really here, and how, you know, the sous chef was in charge and maintaining the recipes whilst the namesake was traveling, opening up more in his empire or her empire. And then 14, I think, was the was local water, which is still a raging debate, local water versus imported water. I don't think that will ever change. 2015 was the rise of coffee, the flat white signature coffee, single origin coffees, and the debate that goes with that. 2016 saw our beloved smashed guacamole, smashed avocado with poached egg on toast. 2017 was the rise of the sharing plates, and that's still, you know, big today. 2018 was a lot of collaborations, a lot of, you know, four hands, six hands, where chefs got together and got creative together. And then last year was clearly the rise of the delivery bike, and how that's changed the landscape as well.
Well, that's something, Zines, that we've talked about, not just throughout the course of last year, but also in the first days of this year, wasn't it?
Yes, we had Mohammed Abidin, owner of Sticky Rice, in the studio. You were a big supporter of his logout campaign.
Love Mo.
He's not a part of any of these apps. We love him too. Very controversial. The video is up on Instagram, by the way, on the Dubai Eye Instagram. But do you agree with him on this one? When he came into the studio and said, customers aren't always right and reviews are not always fair. He even went as far as banning some customers who behave badly and threatened to write a negative review if they didn't get the order they wanted or the service they wanted. So what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think, you know, the customer is king mantra is changing. I think in modern business ethics, there's now an expectation of a responsibility that the company has to their staff. And if customers are, you know, rude or aggressive or acting inappropriately, I think there's an expectation that the company takes a stand against that, you know? Whereas before, I think, you know, a decade ago, 15 years ago, you could get away with being obtuse and rude and aggressive. And I think today the landscape, especially, you know, with the more kind of mindfulness business ethics, it's very much a case of having that, having a big impact and change. And so I think Mo's onto something on that one.
And you see more restaurants sort of fighting back against negative reviews, unfair negative reviews.
Look, I think you pick your battles. I think, you know, I've seen restaurants get involved on you know, online comments, and you just think, ooh, you know, maybe just stop that, because it's just, you know, what's the point, you know? And so I think it's a case of picking your battles and making sure you're still a professional business that people want to do business with.
And you're a very honest food critic. Did you ever get in trouble with any of these restaurants that you reviewed?
I don't think trouble, because again, you know, the way that the reviews are crafted, they're not kind of negative or they never go out to bash someone. And whenever I write the reviews, I try to write it as if I'm writing to the owner of the restaurant, the operator, as if to say, look, you know, I dined at your restaurant. This is what I thought. And I try to make it, you know, a little bit tongue in cheek and a little bit funny as well. And I try to find that kind of that balance. And so far, you know, I'm still here. So I think I'm finding the right balance.
So I wonder whether this is a nice little lead into your first story that's caught your eye. This is a story that came out of The Guardian in the UK. It's The Guardian Online as well. And I wonder whether, given the fact that everyone feels that they are a food critic now and everyone feels that they know what the best
curry
dim sum should taste like or the best Singapore noodles should taste like, this idea of authentic cuisine, because surely the whole idea of a delivery service that takes 20 minutes to get from the restaurant to your door via the Shakeside Road or wherever, is not going to be authentic after that, is it?
Sure. No, you're right. And I think going back to your first point, I think everyone's allowed to be a food critic because they're eating the food, you know, and they know what they enjoy. And who's anyone to say what you do enjoy or you don't enjoy? Because food is so emotional and so personal. So I think that's an interesting stand. And I see some chefs, you know, get quite irate. Oh, who's he or who's she to say this? Well, you know, they can say it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have an issue with that.
Yeah.
I think going to this kind of article from The Guardian, it's actually written by an American Vietnamese lady, Mai Tran, and she got a job in a Vietnamese restaurant in Greenwich in New York, primarily to connect with her Vietnamese community. Ironically, she was the only Vietnamese person working in that restaurant. So there was a lot of Chinese working there. There's a lot of Latino working there. The owners were half Chinese, half Vietnamese. And she, the whole article is about how this restaurant came under intense fire online from Yelp reviewers and online kind of critics questioning the authenticity of the cuisine because the chef wasn't from Vietnam or there wasn't a Vietnamese waitress serving them. And it just got me thinking how weaponized the word authenticity has become and how linked it is to our culture and so important, especially in Dubai, when you've got, what, over 200 nationalities, I think, living in one city, and how we've given up so much of our local culture to be here, you know, but food is one of the last things we give up, and we always gravitate towards it. And I think, you know, for her comments on this article was that it's funny that authenticity is only demanded from certain cuisines, which, when you think about it, is true.
Yeah.
And it's usually, you know, Southeast Asian, it's Indian, it's Cambodian, it's Vietnamese, it's these highly regionalized cuisines that are targeted for being, you know, inauthentic or authentic.
Yeah.
Whereas pizza gets a free pass, you know? You can do anything with a pizza.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can make it out of cauliflower, you can put pineapples on it, you can stuff the crust. I mean, it's crazy, and it just gets a free pass. And
but if you get your jerk seasoning wrong, don't be calling
exactly
it Jamaican, right?
Exactly. And then you look at, you know, pasta Alfredo, you know, unheard of in Italy, you know, or General Tso's chicken, you know, purely an American invention. And so I think, you know, her gripe was, you know, why is it just dedicated towards, you know, her particular cuisine as such? And then the next point she makes is that, you know, culture isn't stagnant, and so therefore recipes shouldn't be stagnant either. And that's a really important point, because if they were, Tom, you and I would still be stuck on boiled cabbage, you know, nettle soup and offal pudding. And I'm quite thankful that our recipes at least have progressed over time. And I think it's just, you know, it's two very, very kind of important, interesting points that she made.
That's the first of our stories. We'll have more with Foodshake in just a few moments' time. How do people follow Mr. Foodshake online, Mrs. Zina Zelemeyer?
Simply look up Foodshake on Instagram. Are you on Facebook? Facebook.
Twitter, yeah.
LinkedIn.
And my website, foodshake.com.
You're listening to The Agenda.
It's all about your news and your views
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We're on a Sunday afternoon paper review with Food Sheik. He's in the studio with us talking through some of the big stories that have caught his and our eyes as well. We go from The Guardian, where we've talked authentic cuisine, to The Times in the UK, again, available online. And this one is going to be an interesting one to monitor throughout the year. The sales of red meat, to rocket or decline? Food Sheik, over to you.
Yeah, so this article is, there's a lot to unpack with this article. So it's effectively about veganism and veganuary, if I'm saying that correctly.
I believe so.
And basically the headline is that sales of meat plunge as Britons choose vegan diets. Apparently, in the first 6 months of last year, 3.6 million fewer animals were eaten thanks to this shift over to veganism. Mm. And there's a charity that runs Veganuary, and they've claimed that 800,000 people signed up last year to participate in the month of January, where you abstain from eating meat and animal byproducts. The sale of red meat fell more than any other category in supermarkets last year in the UK, down £185 million. And by contrast, meat-free alternatives rose by 18%, the highest growth rate of any category. And what's interesting for me about this article is that there's kind of three things that I need to unpack. First is how quickly vegan has become a mainstream narrative. Mm. 5 or 6 years ago, they were the punchline to a lot of jokes, and there was this, and maybe still today, but still, it's become this incredible movement and lifestyle that a lot of people are kind of embellishing. There's two camps for why you go vegan, my understanding. Nonny, you two aren't vegan.
I'm not.
No.
Have you tried a vegan diet?
I did. It lasted about 9 hours.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was on the show, and then I suddenly got a hankering for a burger. But anyway.
Yeah, that's another story.
Yeah.
So there's ethical veganism, which is kind of planet positive, kind of carbon footprint. You know, you want to have that save the planet kind of thing. And then there's kind of the health reasons of eating red meat and that stuff. The response from restaurants and companies has been insane. Mm. Greg's, the famous UK bakery, they revitalized their entire company virtually on their vegan roll last year. And they've just released a new product for this year as well. KFC has done a quick campaign called KFV, where they're doing a vegan fried chicken. Beyond Meat Burgers, Impossible Burgers, Pret a Manger has done a vegan croissant. I even saw on Instagram Gordon Ramsay was slicing open one of his famous beef Wellingtons, but it was a beetroot Wellington.
Right.
For January.
Yeah.
And it's just insane how much these guys see it as being important, you know, for them and their positioning and their product. Waitrose did a survey. 1 in 8 people in the UK are either vegan or vegetarian. And here's what's super interesting. And this just came out a couple of days ago. It was a guy took his employer to court in the UK because he was terminated for being what he felt was because he was being vegan.
Yeah.
And it's just been awarded that ethical veganism is a protected belief, meaning you cannot be discriminated against it. That's crazy. Mm. That is got to that level. And then the second one, in terms of kind of vegan and I think vegans need a better marketing manager.
Yeah.
I think just keep calling it vegetarian fish fingers or vegan fish fingers or vegan chicken wings or vegan beef burgers. I think, you know, stop the association with meat and start coming up with, you know, a better way to frame this new cuisine or this new food. And also, you know, they try to replicate meat so much. They use beetroot juice to replicate the juiciness of a burger.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just think, you know, let's come up with...
That's an interesting point, Rather than being anti-meat or versus meat, just being celebration of vegetables.
Absolutely, yeah. Plant-based. Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to The Agenda with Tom Urquhart.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any better.
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Join the conversation now. Niraj, Saeed have both joined the conversation in the last few moments. So thank you very much indeed for your comments. We'll address those shortly. In the meantime, though, it's back to the Food Shake, who is here with us. Food Shake is our news reviewer today. Do check out and follow online. Just search for Food Shake on whatever platform you are following. Okay, Food Shake, who is, I'm probably going to murder the name here, Sergej Shanda.
Mr. Shanda is a German national. And this is an article from the Kliege Times. It's a short little story, but I found it quite fun. It's basically a story of a marriage proposal.
Okay.
And Dubai is quite famous for marriage proposals. Yeah. I think the Dubai Aquarium's had a few. I think the seafood restaurant in the Burj Al Arab, I think you're allowed to do a marriage proposal down there.
Al-Muntahar, is that the one?
That's
there?
The one, yeah. So this
Pier
happened.
Sheikh, I think they get a few, don't
I'm
they?
I'm sure they do. Yeah. I'm sure they do.
They get a few.
And even some of the cinemas here.
What?
Yeah. Yes. So I know there's a Filipino couple. This guy made a video and he said, could you play the video before you play the movie? And the cinema people said yes.
Wow.
It was on Valentine's Day.
Nice.
Anyway, it's not everyone's cup of tea.
Not my cup of
well,
tea.
this guy might have beaten them all at this. So on New Year's Eve, he made a marriage proposal to his girlfriend, and it was beamed on the Burj Khalifa.
No.
Hours before the world's tallest tower began its iconic annual fireworks and laser show. It happened at 7:30 p.m., so almost prime time. And I have a few questions about this.
Okay.
First, let's talk about cost.
Yep.
It must have been extraordinary.
Yep.
The price to do that. I mean, I'm guessing potentially, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dirhams, I would think. Maybe someone can text in and give us a rate card for this. But the cost must be extraordinary. So my question is there an expectation now? Is he allowed to have a bit more of a low-key wedding? Or does he have to go bigger?
Oh, he has to go all out.
Right?
Yeah. But you said the costs on Imar or the guy?
The guy.
Did the guy have to pay?
I don't know if, I mean, Imar's a business, right?
So the cost to place a promotional advert or a message on the facade of the Burj Khalifa starts at $68,000.
Gosh, this Goodness, guy's dollars. Loaded.
Yeah. Or broke.
And single.
And single. Could have been worse. Okay.
I was trying to find him online. He's off the grid now.
He's gone
now.
Into hiding. Yeah.
Broke.
So then my second question, right? So imagine, you know, up on the Burj it says, you know, will you marry me, Susan? Imagine how many Susans in the crowd
exactly.
that night would have had a minor heart attack that they were thinking that their boyfriends were proposing.
Yeah.
And alternatively...
Oh, no, you didn't.
Alternatively, how many opportunist boyfriends claimed it was their message...
That's a good one.
And that there are a bunch of weddings that are happening that perhaps shouldn't have done. And then the third one, just quickly to round up this story, it was only flashed up on the Burj for 1 second.
Yeah, that's what I just picked up on. I mean,
which is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
Imagine if she was tweeting or she'd gone to the bathroom or stuck in traffic and you would have completely missed it. So anyway, so I just found that quite a fun little story.
And do we know the outcome? Do we know if they will live happily ever after?
Let's
or
say
not?
That they did.
Okay.
You know, let's end on a happy note.
Yeah.
For our own peace of mind.
Exactly.
If anyone has bumped into Mr. Shanda since then, do get in touch with the show. We move on to your next story, and this takes us to the air, doesn't it?
Yes.
Air Asia.
So, it's a story about airline food.
Yeah.
Right? And
you a fan?
Depends if I go right or left when I get on the plane.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, for this story, it's Air Asia, which is, you know, no frills, low cost.
Yep.
I think economy food is what it is.
Yep.
I think they do a good job in the kind of the boundaries that they have.
Yeah.
But what Air Asia is doing... is they are making a restaurant serving their online onboard food.
Nice. Okay.
Which is incredibly interesting, I think, maybe is a diplomatic word. So Tony Fernandez, who's the CEO of AirAsia, Malaysia-based airline, he wants to reduce his company's, he wants to diversify, and he wants to reduce his company's revenue to only 40% from flying, which is surprising for an airline to go that low.
Yeah,
we're an airline, but only 40% of our revenue comes from flying. And so one of his strategies is to open up a chain of fast food restaurants serving airline food. And I just think it's very bold. The article isn't very encouraging about it. She's tried, the author has been to one of the restaurants in Malaysia. It opened in a mall recently in Malaysia. And she says it's doesn't do what it should do. And I just think it's quite an interesting move for a big airline to go into the restaurant industry.
So they've set up, am I getting this right? So they've set up a restaurant on the ground.
On the ground.
Serving the same food that they would serve in the air.
Yeah. It's called Santan, the restaurant. And it serves what they're calling, what he's calling ASEAN food. ASEAN is the acronym for the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. But the problem is ASEAN food doesn't really exist as a category. Yeah. So he's invented a cuisine.
Yeah.
Wrapped a restaurant around it and pulled down all the food he serves in the air down onto the ground.
It's either madness or it's a stroke of genius, because I'm looking at it from a budgeting point of view. Because you're basically welcoming people in, say, we're not going to cook this for you. It's all going to be pre-prepared. We're going to whack it into a microwave and serve it to you in a box like you would get in a plane, because that's why you've walked through our door in the first place.
Yeah.
So your cost would be minimal, wouldn't
it? The second issue is their pricing point is up there with KFC, which is seen as quite an expensive product. So he's not even going for the kind of, you know, low cost
street food type
thing. So it's an interesting move. And you know, a lot of airlines go the other way. They bring in chefs to help them, or food companies to help them. So British Airways, on some flights, you can get some Marks and Spencer's food.
Yeah.
Air France partnered with La Durie. Mm-hmm. I love that Air France do La Durie and we do Marks and Spencer's. I think that's great. but anyway, and even brands, you know, some brands, not even airlines, some brands have quite successfully created F&B. Mm-hmm. IKEA, with their meatballs and their you know, hot dogs.
Yeah.
It's a massive business for them.
Yeah.
And then some have failed spectacularly. Barnes & Noble, the bookstore, they created their own restaurant and had to kind of fly the flag of defeat earlier last year, saying, you know, we just didn't understand. But one of the main criticisms of this was that the food was quite bland and didn't really resonate with the flavors that were expected. And what's interesting is the little fun fact is that at altitude, your taste buds change.
Sure.
And so it's like a bit like having a cold.
Yeah.
You know, your senses get dulled, making food taste quite bland.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they've tried to replicate that completely on the ground. But anyway, time will tell. Look, they want like 100 in their portfolio next few years. So it'll be interesting to see how they develop that through.
See, I read this the wrong way. I thought this was you know, that great idea that I've always meant to have, which was, because for a long time I've sort of held that airline food is one of those things that the number of times I'm on an airline, and whether you're right or left or whatever, the number of people that choose not to eat on planes now, that you suddenly start thinking, hang on, you're talking about waste and you're talking about this. Why are we not in advance going, do you want a meal or not? And if you do want a meal, what do you want? And things like that. And then give them a lunchbox to take on or something like that. You know, prepare it in advance rather than all the hassle there. So doing it the flip way, I didn't realise they were taking the concept of airline food, that much revered airline food that we so look forward to every time we're in the air. Because, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, most specifically, if you're in, I take your point about left or right, but if you're in economy, it just breaks up the boredom, doesn't it? It's one of those ones you get on with the best intentions saying, nah, I don't want that. It's just going to make me feel awful and I'll be in trouble the other end, etc. I just don't want. And then it comes around, you're like,
oh,
another 6 hours to go. Yeah,
some anything. Boxes to open.
Anything.
Yeah. Exactly.
So anything to break it up. But the fact that they've taken that as something to that people would aspire to walk into a restaurant to pay for remains to be seen.
Yeah.
And, I've never met anyone who said, oh, really love that food on the plane. I want some of that, you know, even if I'm not flying. But Alistair thinks it's a business idea that makes sense. Al says the large catering companies can produce thousands of airline meals really cheaply. And if the restaurants can sell them at a large markup, makes business sense.
Yeah, look, I mean, Tony himself says, you know, people are calling me crazy. Yeah. And they called me crazy 18 years ago when he launched the airline. So, you know, maybe he'll prove us wrong again.
They're still calling crazy for buying QPR as well. I can't get away from that one.
Have your say on the agenda. With Tom Urquhart.
On Dubai I 103.8.
Nice to be back in the hot seat. Not our first show for 2020, but I'm sure at the first show for many returning to the UAE for a new year. And it is our first paper review for 2020. That's for sure. We've got Food Shake in with us to kick things off in style, set the bar very, very high for others to follow in the coming weeks. Let's get on to the final story for our discussion today. And it features 2020 because there's a few things on the horizon, Food Shake, that is, well, I'll leave it to you. Is it going to be a good thing or a bad thing for food and beverage?
Yes. It's the answer to that. So this article is from the from Golf News. It's a bit of a kind of a feel-good article. It's the headline is Dubai's F&B feeds on Expo 2020 frenzy. Mm. Obviously, the industry, I mean, I think the whole of Dubai is talking about Expo and what it's going to bring to us. The second subheading is it says new openings and dipping rents make it best of times for industry. Mm. I'm not sure if every operator will agree with that sentiment. But effectively, what the article is kind of going over again is this kind of unstoppable growth of F&B is continuing. Even though 2018 and 2019, we spoke about market saturation and market maturity, and you have certain guests on here that claim that you have to stop giving licenses to restaurants, and it's a you know, a highly charged debate.
Yeah.
And yet the industry keeps on plowing forward with spaces and malls and developments, and it's just mind-blowing. And that's outside of what Expo is going to bring in a few months' time. Mm. And I think this article kind of it talks about, there's a statistic here that is particularly telling. So in 2019, every single day, two new licenses were being issued for a new F&B business. Mm. Every single day. So that's about 730 new F&B businesses that opened in 2019, right? So here's where I kind of do a bit of red thread. If you've got 730 new restaurants, you need, if let's say each restaurant has five chefs, you need 3,500 chefs, right? And equally 3,500 servers, right? Where are we getting competent staff from to man these experiences? You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, there seems to be a lack of service sometimes.
Yeah.
in some of these restaurants that we go to. And if you're growing so fast as an industry and you can't train and recruit and attract the right talent fast enough, you're just going to fill it with warm bodies. You got a pair of shoes, you're hired, you know? And and suddenly you've got, you know, 2020, the world is looking at us. And we've got restaurants that are perhaps unable to execute to the standard that's expected. Mm. And I think that's just such an interesting kind of dynamic of what's perhaps going to be one of the big challenges for this year, of being able to, because look, we've got a lot of restaurants. The saving grace is the ones that do well are going to survive, and the ones that are becoming mediocre are going to fall away.
But you're right in pointing out waiting staff, because I think they could be the sort of power brokers in many way, because, you know, I think the sad thing is now when you go into a venue and you get a good waiter or waitress who listens to your demands, makes suggestions, make alterations to a dish, can tell you what's in a dish, etc. It makes you go back there because it's such a breath of fresh air.
Yep.
And it should be the other way around.
Yeah.
And yet, because we're getting this this process waiting staff at the moment, customer service staff, who are reading some sort of laminated menu, and if it's not in that laminated menu, then they don't know anything about it.
Absolutely right. I was at a conference, a kind of a trade conference earlier, late last year, and we had a bunch of kind of young students from the Emirates Academy on stage, and they were asked, you know, why are you not going out? How do we attract you as an audience to the F&B industry? Why are you staying in? Why are you ordering, you know, online deliveries and streaming at home? And they said very clearly that it's overpriced and the experience isn't good enough, you know, for what they pay. They pay, what, a couple of hundred dirhams in transport to get there. They pay another few hundred dirhams upwards, plus, for the experience. And, you know, for that amount, it was better for them to stay at home on their phones, chat with their friends, and watch some TV. And that's really quite sad.
Yeah.
You know? And a few restaurants kind of buck the trend, and they're you know, they're famous for pumping out really strong kind of F&B talent. But then they just become a poaching grounds for other restaurants. And, you know, if one operator says, I'll give you 50 dirhams more a month, you know, people move on. And so it's going to be a real challenge for operators to find ways to kind of attract and develop their talent to make it what we want it to be.
It's going to be a fascinating year for us all. Food Shape will be all over it in his inimitable fashion, so make sure that you are part of the journey as well. I can't thank you enough for coming in and doing the first paper review of the year. If people want to follow you online, Food Shape, how do they do that?
Yeah, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, foodshake.com and Food Shape, Food Shape, Food Shape.
Really appreciate all your time. Thank you very much indeed. Our thanks to Food Shape. Thanks to all of you for your contributions. Zines, you're right as well. We'll see you all tomorrow from 10.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.